So good morning and welcome, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. My name is Candace Sutcliffe. I'm the Senior Vice President and Chief Compliance Officer for Liberty Mutual Group. I am also an executive co-sponsor of our Women's Employee Resource Group, which is our largest ERG at Liberty Mutual. And our mission statement is empowering women, engaging men, enhancing our success. And that fits very nicely with the themes of the Mass Women's Conference. So I am very pleased to be here. Liberty Mutual is very pleased to be a sponsor of the conference. This is a wonderful audience, and we're so happy to have so many women and maybe some men from across Massachusetts. The Mass Conference is wonderful because it offers a real blend of practical tools and advice and inspiration and peer networking, and is committed to the empowerment of women. So thank you for participating in this breakout session entitled Managing Up, a Strategic Approach to Success in the Workplace. And we have a wonderful hour in store for you today. I'm going to take a minute to do a brief introduction of Deb Pine, who is our thought leader for this morning's session. And you have Deb's full bio in your materials. Deb Pine serves as the executive director of the Center for Women in Business at Bentley University. She sets and leads all external and internal strategic efforts, including corporate engagement, student initiatives, faculty collaboration, and research. And that's very brief because she has a very lengthy bio, so you should take a look at the rest of her credentials. So I'm going to turn the podium over now to Deb Pine.
Thank you, Candace, and thank you all for being here today. As Candace mentioned, the center, I'm not sure how familiar you all are with the Center for Women in Business at Bentley University, but we are really dedicated to advancing women in workplace diversity, and we say from the classroom to the boardroom. So in addition to all the programs we do for our students to prepare them for leadership and success in their careers, we work hand-in-hand with corporate partners on identifying best practices and policies and doing internal training for them so that they can become more inclusive organizations around topics like engaging men as allies, building confidence among young women, mentorship, sponsorship, all of those things that are critically important. But I am pleased to talk to you today about managing up. Why are we here today? Well, the first reason is the Mass Conference for Women organizer said this was the most requested topic. And as you can see from the attendance in the room, it must be an important and hot topic. So what do we mean by managing up? Managing up is actually a term that was first coined in 1980 at the Harvard Business Review by two Harvard professors. And it really is about developing an effective, productive, mutually rewarding relationship with your manager that has positive outcomes for you, your boss, and the organization. But why is it so important? I focus on three reasons. First, work takes up so much of our lives. According to Psychology Today magazine, an average worker spends 90,000 hours in their lifetime, which is 10 years of life, 24/7, at work. And that's second only to sleep. By the way, we spend 25 years sleeping in our lives. So it's important because it's so significant in our life. It also is important because it leads to job satisfaction and employee engagement. Gallup did a survey of a million people, and they found the number one reason people leave their jobs, their boss. So again, it's really critical to have a good relationship and a productive relationship with your boss to be an engaged, productive employee. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, it's really critical to career progression. You know, if you read the most recent McKinsey Lean-In study, you know that women do not get promoted at the same rate as men at every level of the pipeline. So really having the feedback from managers is critically important. Stanford University did a study in 2016, which basically proved that Men get more specific feedback based on business outcomes than women do. And just think about it, when it comes time for a promotion, having that documentation about business outcomes is critically important. And we're going to talk a little bit about feedback today. So in conclusion, managing up is important because it's a significant part of our lives and our careers. And when you manage up effectively, everybody wins because you are helping your boss do his or her job and making it easier. And as a result, you are become viewed as being indispensable and very valuable on the team. Before I move on to introducing the panel today, which we're very fortunate to have, I wanted to just share a personal story. A couple of weeks ago, I was starting to think about this conference, and I was having dinner with my husband and my 16-year-old son, and I said, you know, I have to do this panel discussion and do this talk on managing up, but I'm not really sure what to say because, I don't really manage up. To which my 16-year-old son said, well, what is managing up, Mom? And I told him, and he did what only a 16-year-old boy can do, rolled his eyes and said, Mom, of course you manage up. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, you just tell them what to do. And I thought, well, actually, there's some truth to that. After reflecting on it, let me tell you what I came to. First, by a raise of hand, how many of you have one-on-one meetings on a regular basis with your managers? Good, most people. Well, my tip number one for today is if you don't, you need to start, because research shows employees are 3 times more likely to be engaged and satisfied in their jobs when they have regular conversations with their managers. So what I usually do, I've always done this, had a regular meeting with my manager, and I usually go prepared with about 5 bullet points of projects to update on progress, where I'm going next on each of those, and then I ask for support that I need. And maybe that's what my son means by you tell them what to do. Because it might be, you know, I have a roadblock here. Can you make this call for me? Or could you introduce me to this person? Or can I have an additional resource? So I'm very specific about what I need to be successful in the assignments that I have. So that's my second tip. My third tip is what I do at the end of every conversation, one-on-one meeting. I ask, and what can I do for you? And it's really interesting. The first time I do it with a new manager, they're like, for me? You want to do something for me? Well, no, I think I'm fine. But over time, it really turns out to be a career-building opportunity, because I find that when you do that, you get responses like, well, you know, I've been thinking about launching this initiative, but I don't really know, you know, if how to get that started. Would you want to take a shot at it? Ooh, a stretch assignment. Or, oh, you know, I have to be out of town next week. Would you attend this really important meeting for me and let me know how it goes? Oh, visibility. So again, those are some ways that I think that I've, in my career, managed up, if you will, and really try to focus on career advancement. So those are my tips. And what we're going to do today is I'm going to introduce the panel. We're going to have a couple of questions. We'll have questions from the audience. And then I'm going to circle back and ask each of the panelists to leave with 1 or 2 really specific takeaways that you can apply back at your office, because it's an important topic and we want to make sure you're empowered to make change and take action. So I am thrilled to introduce our panelists here today. And just as my bio is in the program, so to our panelists, but sitting directly to my left is Celeste Headley. She's the award-winning journalist and author of We Need to Talk. Must say, even though that's her book, she has got a little bit of a cold right now, so it's going to be a little difficult for her to talk, but she's going to do her best, and I'm sure she'll be fabulous. Immediately to her left, we have Denise Cox, who's the Vice President, Technical Service Americas for Cisco Systems. And Mita Guglielmi, Head of Strategy, Business Development, and Transformation at Millipore Sigma. So please join me in welcoming the panelists. So I thought I'd start with a question for Celeste. You know, I talked a little bit in my intro about what I do to manage up. And given the work that you've been doing and the books that you've written, you've focused a lot on importance of communications and the power of conversation to build bridges and maybe have some divides if not are done correctly. Could you share with the audience sort of your tips for having a successful conversation with her boss, especially in this time where there's email, texting. Conversation is almost a lost art in some cases.
Yeah, and that's the first thing I would say is stop using email as much as you do. And there's really good scientific research behind this. I'm going to lay some of it down for you. The first thing is that all of us are the worst possible version of ourselves in digital media. We are more likely to be rude, we're less likely to negotiate, and we're more likely to escalate conflict. So the first thing is that both you and your boss are going to be the worst version of yourselves in email. So do not use email except for the limited number of things that email is good for. That is sending attachments, sending agendas, sending summaries, delegating specific tasks, things like that, specific exchanges of limited information, email is perfect. Otherwise, pick up the phone or go see them in person. And I want to really emphasize seeing somebody in person because another amount of research that we have shows that we often predict we will be very persuasive in email. But when we have tested that out, you are something like 3 to 4 times more persuasive face-to-face than you are in email. So especially when you're asking for something or criticizing someone, that should never go in email. And another thing that should never go in email is an apology. An apology, if you've done something wrong, now there's a really kind of detailed process that happens in the human brain, in the human body, before you get to forgiveness and being able to put something behind you and move on. But it all starts when the compassion center in your brain lights up. Like if you take your finger and put it at the top of your ear and then move it up 1 inch and back 1 inch, that needs to light up. Now what they have found is that when somebody hears your voice or sees you trying to apologize, it's hard. It's difficult to do that. And so we hear that and we see it. And this compassion center goes, bing. When you send it by email or by text, nothing. So that whole process of getting to forgiveness and moving on never occurs. So that would be the first thing I would say is start picking up the phone or seeing people in person and don't use email for everything.
Thank you. Denise, I was going to ask you a question. I talked a little bit about the importance of communication. And especially given what Celeste said about having face-to-face, Cisco is a decentralized environment. People work remotely. Can you talk about some of the strategies you use for managing your boss remotely and maybe what your team does to manage you?
Sure. No, I'm often quoted with my team as saying, our ability to work decentralized is a blessing, but it's also a challenge. Right? It's a blessing because it allows people to live where they want to live, to be able to, you know, prioritize some family things or some things like that. But it's a challenge because we are literally spread all over. And, you know, I only joined Cisco about 1.5 years ago, but I remember about 15 years ago, I was interviewing for a new job and I was asked how I would feel about not reporting to a person on site, you know, at the physical location that I would be at. And 15 years ago, I thought about it, and I thought, well, gee, I haven't reported to someone in the same building as myself since 1995. And today it's 2017, and I still have not reported to someone in the same building as myself since 1995. I have a direct report staff of about 9 people at Cisco today. The only person that's in the same state as I live in is my administrative assistant, my EA. Everybody else is scattered between Massachusetts, Florida, Texas, California, and so we are a very, very spread out team. And that has its own challenges. You know, Celeste just said it's important to do this, to have this face-to-face communication. So some of the things that we employ are embracing the technology that's available to all of us today. Back in 1995, I was reduced to some email and some voicemail. But today, we do a lot of telepresence or video conference, right? I would encourage all of you to turn your camera on if someone has their camera on. And if they don't, to turn yours on anyway and invite them to turn theirs on so that you can make that connection with them. I've also found that when you are as spread out as we are, you need to communicate much more frequently than you might think that you need to. Right? So it's important to have frequent, short duration touch points, not just a weekly or biweekly hour-long one-on-one, but sometimes it's just a quick IM or Jabber session, sometimes it's a quick text message to bridge that gap until you can get to that face-to-face, that video conversation. So, again, Cisco is great because we do have all the technology, but I think what you'll find in today's day and age is there's plenty of applications out there that anyone can download and use. It's just a matter of training yourself to do that and then training yourself to put the camera on and get comfortable with the idea that you're going to be on camera with your team.
Wonderful tip. Next best thing to having the face-to-face, right, Celeste?
Yes, absolutely.
Nita, you bring a unique perspective to the panel, having worked in many large, corporate, complex, global environments. Those can be a challenge for managing up. Can you share some of your experiences and what's worked for you?
Absolutely. And Denise, I'll start by saying I really like your definition of managing up, because as I was reflecting, it's really about creating the conditions for your success as you try to build this productive relationship, right? So there are three messages I want to share with you from my experience. The first is, as Deb said, it is a two-way street. It is about you getting the best from your manager and the manager getting the best from you as you try to leverage one another's complementary skills. The second, and that's about the global matrix organization, very often you don't have one manager. You have multiple managers or multiple stakeholders, and I want to talk about that. And the third one is you really have to work at developing an active, supportive relationship with your manager or managers, right? And I want to share a personal story. It's one of my early lessons that I hope you can get something from this. So I was in strategy consulting for many years. And from strategy consulting, I got my big break, you know, in the corporate world. I was a head of strategic planning. I thought it was a dream job. And I joined a global medical marketing organization, which means that I joined at the heart of the matrix, right? I really liked my manager. We had a great relationship. I thought I did lots of good things. I was proactive. I delivered reliably. And importantly, everybody could see I was working for his success. Now, my manager really supported me as well, right? So he gave me opportunities. He trusted in me, cared about my development. So this felt like a good managing up relationship, right? Because we brought the best out of one another, and together we did very good things. Now, 1.5 years later, he left, and my world changed dramatically. Why? Because he'd been a very senior but political figure, and I had not taken the time to build my relationships beyond my team. And everybody viewed me then as his person, and they had a difficult time trusting me. And that was a really important and tough lesson for me, that you really have to think beyond managing your boss in your matrix environment, right? And the third one is then, as I navigated through the organization, what I did is I had very open, active conversations with my key stakeholders, and I asked for feedback, and I got some tough feedback. But in hindsight, that's exactly what I needed, because then I knew what I could do, right? So long story short, I spent 8 years with the company. I went through many roles, had a very good career there, but these are my three key lessons that I really believe are important in a global matrix organization.
Mita, I appreciate that, and I'd like to talk a little bit about how to ask for feedback from a manager when it isn't forthcoming. Anybody want to address that?
I think one of the best ways to get real feedback, and let me be, I'm so glad, Deb, that you're really focusing on feedback, because the one thing that we know, the number one most valuable thing to you, and this is not just in the work world, is honest feedback. And I hate to break it to you, but you're probably not getting a lot of it. So one of the best things you can do is, A, make sure that you're in the mindset that you want honest feedback. Effective feedback, and you do want it. Let me tell you that right now. And the second thing is that when you receive it, be a good recipient. You need to be like that person at the Christmas party. You don't want to be the one that gets the gift and goes, oh, thanks. When someone gives you effective feedback, even if they botch it, even if they screw it up and deliver it to you in a way that hurts your feelings, you can still encourage them to do it better next time by saying, hey, listen, the way that you just phrased this because of this, this, and this, makes me feel defensive or hurts my feelings, but can I ask you a few questions to get at what you're really saying to me? Because I want to get the feedback. If you are a good recipient of the feedback, people are more likely to give it to you. And that's really valuable. Not all of that feedback and criticism is going to be negative. Some of it's going to be good. But if you are a bad recipient of that, people will be less likely to give you honest feedback. They won't tell you the truth. And that's when you're in trouble.
Great. Anybody else?
Yeah. I mean, for me, as I thought of this question, and I think this is spot on, I was thinking about career feedback, right? As you talk about your career progression and also building your own advocacy, right? So one of the things I want to say is the perception is that you think your manager owes you feedback. And I would really say, back to the point made, setting the expectation, making your own advocacy, asking for career feedback is your responsibility. And I would say that for me, that has always worked. I've always directly asked for feedback. And, you know, underlying all of this is I can take it. Give me the tough feedback.
Yeah.
For me, that's really important.
And one thing that we know happens is that women tend to get less specific feedback. Mm-hmm. So one other thing to do is, rather than having a response, oh, you did a good job on that presentation, well, what specifically did I do well, and what would you have me do differently next time so that I can learn and grow, right?
Yeah, in an honest atmosphere of curiosity, making sure questions are powerful. Questions are very powerful. Simple, straightforward questions. And as long as you truly are ready to get the answer to it, people will be willing to answer your question.
And I'll tell you, not everyone knows how to give feedback.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, if it's important to you, which it should be, not only do you need to ask for it, but sometimes you need to train the person to give you feedback. So, you know, for example, sometimes you can be a little self-reflective. And, you know, if you ask somebody for feedback and they say, oh, no, you did great, you know, say, well, you know, when I reviewed what I did, I thought I could have spent more time in this area, or I wish I had thought to do that. And if you kind of open that dialogue with them, for the person who might be uncomfortable giving you that feedback, you've just kind of brought them along with you so that they can reflect and give you stuff that you would not have noticed.
And Mita, I want to reflect back on a point that you made about managing senior people in a matrix organization. Another sort of flavor of that is managing your mentor or your sponsor. Would anybody like to talk about that as well?
Get a mentor. I can't tell you how many times I speak, and I speak to young, I'm part of NPR's training program for young journalists. And at the end of every single project, I hand them my personal card. And if you know me, you know what that means. And I say, email me or call me if you have a question, if you want me to look over a story. And I'm really, really freaking busy. So that offer is sincere, but I have, in almost 20 years of doing the training program, I have not had a single journalist take me up on it. Not one. So let me tell you something. When you are offered training or advice, take it. Never turn down free training. Even if it's in something that you don't think you're interested in, do not turn down free training. And in terms of managing up, that's part of it. I mean, sometimes we don't like to get advice, and it goes back to feedback, because we think it's some kind of underhanded criticism of us. But sometimes, and people can be ham-handed about it. Remember that a lot of managers are not like Deb or Mitha or Denise. They don't get training in how to be a manager. A lot of managers are promoted and never taught how to do what they're doing, which means you can be part of that, of helping them do what for them is a difficult job. And part of that is finding those mentors, even if it's your boss or somebody else, finding them and then making that a two-way street. And it's a positive interaction so that they feel empowered to use that more.
You know, you made me think of two things. I'm sorry, did I step on you?
No, please.
But two things. One is, when someone offers you that card, hey, let me know if I can help, or, you know, feel free to contact me in the future, we all know how to manage our own schedules. So you can't put a burden on us.
Yeah.
Right? If we open the door, if we extend the invitation, we mean it. That's why we do what we do. That's why we offer. The second thing that I think it's important to remember is not every mentor is the right mentor for every person, and not every mentor is the right person for you at a specific point in your life, right? So it's important to kind of have that dialogue with someone around what are you trying to achieve, what are you hoping to learn, and oftentimes you need several mentors in several different areas so that you can get that full-rounded feedback.
And I would just add on that, because I'm linking it to the matrix, right? So one key point that I pick from this is be selective in your mentor, mm-hmm. right? And your mentor has to have your best interest. And in the context of the matrix, because I live in that world, try to take a mentor who's not directly in your area, right? Because when I was talking about these multiple stakeholders, you have your boss and you're in that team. You need a reflection from the outside who'll broaden your horizon. So think broadly in the matrix, who could be a mentor that can help you grow through the organization in different ways.
And, sorry, one
no,
more thing.
No, go ahead, we have time.
In all this time that nobody has asked me for help on a story or anything like that, I have had 8 people eventually email me to ask for a reference, which they did not get. Don't do that. You, when you're finding a mentor, it needs to be real, and you need to find the right one, like Denise said, and you need to find somebody, hopefully, that's going to be able to give you sort of outsized comp, but don't come to me because you need something, and I don't know you.
Right. Yeah. And it very much is the mentee's responsibility for managing the relationship.
Yes.
Right? Because it's not the mentor directing it. It has to be mentee directed to really be most valuable. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about working for a manager who might have a totally different style than you do, because it's easier when you and your manager sort of have the same approach and get one another, but that doesn't always happen. Anyone want to address?
Yeah, I'll start because I can write a book on this. So I want to give you a story, really. I was appointed first time as a general manager running 4 countries, India, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka. My manager was running 137 countries. He had 37 years of experience. I had been in the company for 2 years, right? And he was this top-down, traditional leader. He was a general. He said something, you execute. And he had this very strong belief, because I was in an emerging market, that the way to build emerging markets is through relationships. So you have to build government relationships, customer relationships. So I came in, and I had been out of India for 20 years, which is where I'm originally from. And I felt, I was strongly about empowered leadership. And I thought that the biggest gap there was skill building. So I wanted to build my sales team, my marketing teams. I wanted to set up analytical capabilities, digital capabilities. We were as different as you could possibly be. And it was not easy. And I would say that a couple of things, right, two or three things. First, I really tried to get his perspective and see where he's coming from. So I did build a government relations organization because he was right. He was absolutely right, and I tried to incorporate his perspective. 2, I find that you have to work double as hard here. I really had to manage his expectations, set milestones, do regular check-ins, because I was doing stuff different from what he would have normally done. And the third is that I reflected that he probably was never going to be a great champion for me. I kind of knew that. And so while I was managing him, I had people who I knew at the corporate headquarters. I built a broader coalition of support. Back to my original story where I hadn't got any support, right? So that really worked. So for me, if I summarize this, 1, it's hard. It takes double the amount of effort. But how you create your conditions for success is really important. You decide what you want out of that relationship, and you have to manage it. 2, it's okay to acknowledge that you don't have the best relationship or will never have it, but at least don't be naive about it. And again, do what you want out of it. And 3, by the way, you always have the option of changing your job, right? You don't have to be in a relationship which is not great. So anyway, that's my experience, and I can talk lots about this experience with you.
Anyone who's been reading the newspapers about WNYC knows that it's a little bit ironic for me to be on a Managing Up panel at this moment. So I just want to acknowledge that right now. But first of all, I want to make sure that we're never talking about an abusive relationship. That's not what Deb means when she's talking about a different style. If it's an abusive relationship with your manager, you need to bring that forward. You need to decide with your own agency what is a healthy environment for you and leave if you need to, if you think there can't be positive change in the organization. Okay. But second of all, some of the best research we have about diversity shows that even if we don't enjoy a diversity of opinions. This isn't about politics. This is human beings. We don't like it. So we would prefer a group in which everyone sort of liked the same things and sort of agreed and worked the same way. But the tough truth is that you get your best work out of a group when they're really different. And part of that is because, of course, you're going to get a diversity of opinions and people are going to have different perspectives. But another part of that is that when you're in a group where you're expecting there to be possible pushback, you yourself usually work harder. You come to meetings more prepared. You do go the extra mile because you're expecting it to be harder to get done what you need to be done. So even though you're not enjoying it, very often that diversity of style, that difference of opinion, can get the best out of you. So Meath is absolutely right. Acknowledge that it's there. Be honest about that. But stop for just a moment and think to yourself, okay, so I'm never going to want to go out and have a beer with this woman or guy, but what is it that he's doing that I can actually, that actually is going to help me? Yeah, and learn from.
Right. Absolutely.
What about, you know, there's a lot of reorganizations, people change jobs often. What tips would you give to people when you're starting out with a new manager?
Yeah. So, you know, I first and foremost, I think we all need to understand that just because we show up to work one day in a different capacity doesn't mean we're going to save the world, right? And you know, there's a time there where you have to learn and you have to kind of be reflective. And I worked under this CEO for a while in a previous company who said, in order to truly move the organization forward, the first thing that you need to do is learn to respect your elders. And what he meant by that is understand why we are where we are before you try to interject your style or change. And he didn't mean take your time and be slow about it, right? But he just meant, you know, take a step back because people made decisions or this leader has a style because of different things that happened at different points in time for most likely the right reason. That might not be the right reason anymore. And so unless you take that kind of longer tail reflection, it's hard to really have an impact. And so as your leadership changes, you know, I take the approach that, one, I have to learn the new person, learn the new organization, and kind of learn that ancestral history of why the organization is where they are so that I can try to add maximum value and fit in as quickly as possible as the change disruptor that I like to be. Right? It's not to say, you know, sit on your hands and don't push the envelope. It's just to say you can push better if you understand why you are where you are.
That is such good advice. That is great.
Great.
Respect your elders.
We've talked a lot about managing up. Can you? Does anyone want to address the issue of things that people who work for them are doing that are particularly helpful to you as a manager?
For me, the main thing is that I need my employees to tell me when something's going wrong. I need them to put up the red and yellow flag. You know, one of the hard, and this is a whole chapter in my book, the difficulty that we have in saying, I don't know. It's the three hardest words are not, I love you, they're, I don't know. We have a hard time saying that because we don't want to admit that we don't know something. But the fact of the matter is we all know everyone can't know everything. And if you pretend like you know everything, then subconsciously I'm sitting here wondering which of that is true and which isn't. And the other thing is that when that thing you didn't know how to do or didn't know was a problem suddenly blows up, I'm going to be looking at you and going, at the end of the meeting when I said anything else, that was your moment. So that's the first thing, is to let me know when you're having trouble with something. Let me know. Like, I'm in radio, so if you don't know how to use a particular digital editor, don't say, oh, I know, and then spend, you know, 10 hours on the weekend watching every YouTube video ever. I can get that done for you. just let me know, and I'm happy to help you with that. I can find you the help that you need. That's what I'm there for. So let me know what your challenges are. Let me know when you don't know. And the other thing is, I would like, you know, here's, very often people give really bad advice, and they say, keep emotion out of it. And let me explain why this is bad advice. It's because that's impossible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You cannot keep emotion out of it. Human beings are essentially social and emotional creatures. We like to think we're logical creatures, but I can just break that bubble for you right now and tell you we are not. We are emotional and social creatures, and that is a strength. So, when you are coming and talking to me, don't try to be like, well, and try to be all businesslike about it. If you're passionate about something, tell me. If something's upsetting you, tell me. And it'll be, you are my responsibility. I'm there to help you. I am better if you're doing better. And the very last thing, I don't mean to talk for a very long time, but the very last thing I would say is keep in mind that the human brain can only hold on to 3 or 4 things at the same time at any moment, which means don't come into my office, don't save everything that's going wrong for weeks at a time and then come into my office and be like, and also. I can only hold on to 3 of them, which means basically the rest of it is flushing. So come in, choose one thing, give me both the problem and what you think the solution is, and I will do everything that I can for you.
And I think that's critical what you said, which is if you come with a problem, you should come with at least one solution.
Suggested.
Right, even if you don't have the final answer.
Right.
Mita.
I'll just tack briefly onto that, which is it's about empowerment, right? So all of us want to be able to run and find our feet, and the best way that empowerment works from a manager's perspective is, I empower you, then do a couple of things for me. Don't surprise me, right? And that's building on what this is saying. And 2, then if I've empowered you, I rely on you to tell me when I need to help you. And that's very consistent with what you're saying. So then I'm going to let you go, and then the onus is on you to come back to me and ask when you need help and keep me updated, posted, no surprises. And the no surprise is really important.
Well, one last question, I think, before we're going to turn it over to the audience, which is, you know, in these times, you're always resource-constrained, asked to do more. How do you handle a situation where you need to set boundaries or say no?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things, right? There's boundary setting because you're not comfortable doing something, right? And then there's boundary setting because you're full, you're overworked. And I think on the I'm full, there's nothing else that can fit on my plate example, you need to be honest and you need to talk about it. And you need to remember that you're not a one-person army. So a lot of times things that you've kept on your plate, you may find that you can move or delegate to somebody else and create a learning opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, you know, no, I can't fit it, it might be, sure, I would love to help you with that. Can you give me an hour, a day, or whatever to see if I can move this other event that I was going to do and get somebody else to do that? And it's about that constant shifting and prioritization of everything, because there is no real black and white there, and there's no perfect schedule, right? We were joking when you said how much time we spend at work versus how much time we spend asleep, because we all think that ratio may be inverted, right? So we know that everyone is kind of, you know, at full capacity, and it's really just a matter of talking about the prioritization.
And maybe, you know, I read a very interesting Forbes article which helped put my thoughts together. It said, sandwich a no between 2 yeses. And I don't mean that you say yes to 2 more jobs, but the way I reflect on the yeses, and that's what this article said, when you're saying no to something, you're saying yes to something else. Either it's something that you're doing today or something that you're doing in the future. So the first yes between the two, between the no and the 2 yeses, the first yes is, what else are your priorities? And you can set that context and explain what you're doing or what you want to do. So that's the first yes, right? It's a yes because you're doing something else. And the second yes is the solution, which is, if you can't do it, who else can do it? Or you can do it 1 week later, or you can do it 2 weeks later. And then you really have to keep in mind that your manager and your success is together, right? So they will get it. But providing that context, that first yes, and coming with a solution enables you to say the no instead of just, no, I can't do it.
Great. Thank you. And I think we're going to open it up to questions to the audience.
Right, Kim? Hi.
Hi.
We can't see you, but...
Can we just thank our panelists because they've had some great insights? And can we raise the lights just a little bit? Is that possible? Maybe not. Maybe not. There are microphones set up in each of the aisles, so if you would like to ask a question, please come forward. And I may not be able to see you, but I'll do the very best I can to go from side to side. Is there somebody right in the front here?
Yeah. Go ahead. Hi. You were talking about emotion and being passionate. I am emotional. I am passionate. And that has amounted to me crying in a meeting before.
Not the best.
And yeah.
Anybody want to raise their hand that they did the same? No? Yeah. You are not alone.
Yeah. So, and, you know, instantly I feel like I'm that kind of crying woman in the room. So I was wondering, have you ever been in the position, on the other side of the table, how does that change the message that's, you know, the person's trying to deliver?
So me as the manager, the first thing I do is I stop trying to, number one, I don't take a moment to think about the crying. And the crying is happening. You know, it's funny because a lot of our research on emotionality is tainted because the researchers for so long have been men. And one of the reasons why science has told us that women are more emotional than men is because for decade after decade after decade, they weren't counting anger as an emotion. Turns out that when you add anger into the mix, men are much more emotional. That's okay to cry. You shouldn't feel bad about it. You can say, listen, I'm passionate about this. Right. But I need to finish this point. It's important. And you don't act like it's something that you need to be ashamed about, because it's not.
Don't apologize.
Don't apologize for it, and just continue with your point. Yeah. If you're crying, that means that point is really important. Don't let the crying move you away from what that really important point is. On the other hand, when something is that important to you and you need to respond, give it 24 hours. Because your emotion will distort your logical thinking on the problem. So I would always give something 24 hours before you respond.
And I'll tell you, something I learned from a boss a long time ago, which I was like, wow, you can really say that, is it's okay to tell someone, I really want to have this conversation, but I can't do it right now.
Right.
You know, and move it later in the day or move it tomorrow. And I remember the first time one of my bosses said that to me. I went to her. And she was like, look, Denise, I can't do this right now. We'll do it tomorrow. And I think that's a powerful tool that you have in your tool set, right? And then you can go back when you are a little bit more open to having the dialogue.
Absolutely.
I think there Thank is you. Someone on this side. Is there someone in the aisle? No, none of us can see.
Hi.
Yes, there is.
Thank you so much. Really helpful panelists. I wanted to know a little bit more about when you're asking for feedback consistently, all the things, the one-on-one, self-reflection, et cetera, and you're not getting it, consistently not getting it, or you're getting sort of lip service in terms of feedback. Oh, great job on this. And even when you try to dig deeper, you're still not getting anything that's helpful for your career and development of your relationship with your manager. How do you work around or through that, and what are some tips for that?
Thank you. Touched on mentors, right? Yeah. Because your direct manager is not the only person that can give you some of that feedback and some of that reflection. You know, you can ask people, you can ask peers, you can ask subordinates, you can ask people at other parts of the organization to try to get that. And then, I forget who said it, maybe Mitra, is sometimes after enough time and enough reflection, you might realize that superior is not the best boss for you, right? I like to tell people not every boss is the best boss for every person. And if you really feel that they're not helping you grow, because, you know, let's admit it, it's every manager's job to help their employees grow. If your manager is not helping you grow, they're not doing you a service, and you've got to figure out how you're going to address that. But I would get feedback from willing participants if you can't get it from your direct boss.
And also, look around and see if there is anybody who is successful at getting that feedback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are they doing something differently than you are? I mean, sometimes, like Denise is saying, you know, don't hit your head against a wall. Find a new mentor, find a new boss. But sometimes it's that you kind of have to speak a different language. Sorry.
And, you know, you should ask for, the thing here is ask for help. You can go to your HR person or you can go to your peers and say, help me with this conversation. You'd be surprised how many people are willing to help. And the other thing is, don't forget, we've talked about mentors. Sometimes you need people outside the organization like a coach where you just say, this is not working. And that coach can help you realize and say, this is not the right relationship for you, or have you tried saying it this way or that? So asking for help, I think, is and going beyond your manager is perfectly... You're not telling on your manager. You're just broadening the stakeholder set from which you're asking for feedback.
A coach is not your BFF. That's not a good coach.
Thank you.
I know we have a line of folks over here, too, so let's go to that aisle.
So similarly, on the feedback topic, sometimes I feel it's a fine line between, one, requesting feedback because you want to continue growing versus sounding insecure. So what's that fine line? What's
motivating your request for feedback? Is it insecurity?
No, well, sometimes could be. I mean, sometimes you might be feeling that you're not doing things correctly, so you want to hear from others what are the things that you're doing well or not to continue growing, but also there could be something that you're not analyzing well about yourself.
I think if you are looking for feedback because you want affirmation or a compliment, you probably want to have a discussion with a good buddy over a cocktail or a cup of coffee instead.
Very good.
Right? And have that buddy be the person that puts their arm around you and pats you on the back. If you're looking for feedback because you truly want to try to improve something, then I don't think the approach would feel that way. Right? I think you'd be okay.
Let's come back to the center aisle here.
Hi, my name's Jessica. Can I just say I'm so glad the mic is facing this way and not that way because otherwise I'm going to be up here. I'm in a junior level position where I edit and manage an internal publication, and I have a team of writers that I manage, but they are all, you know, mid-50s, older, very accomplished, and here I am, a 20-something-year-old, trying to give edits, trying to keep them to stay on deadlines. And it's really challenging because they are very set in their ways. They know, they've been in the business for a long time. Do you have any advice to me on how I can still assert myself but maintain a collegial relationship with them?
Okay, a couple things, and they're very, very practical. Number one, give them the opportunity to tell you, like Denise was saying, why things are the way that they are. So there's this really interesting study that came out from Harvard in 2014 in which they discovered that talking about yourself is as pleasurable as sex and heroin. So yes, that's bad because it means we all talk about ourselves too much. But it's good because you can make other people feel good by letting them talk about themselves. And in your situation, that's letting them talk about their work process, what it is that they need in order to get things done, letting them, hearing them. You don't make them promises that you're not going to keep. You're still the boss and you're going to decide. But you can let them explain to you why things are the way they are. The other thing that we have discovered through a lot of research is that people, we don't know why, but when someone is feeling good about themselves, like proud of themselves or something that they've done, they're like double digits more likely to be open-minded. So before you introduce a change, start it off by asking them, okay, what's the best work you've done this week? Let them feel that moment of pride because for whatever reason, it flips a switch in your brain and then they'll be more open to whatever it is you say afterwards.
Okay, let's go over to this aisle and then we'll have one more question after this.
Thank you very much. I'm going to bring the question back again to emotions because you said something that got my attention. One of the things that I learned growing up in the field in general, I had a comp sci degree, two females in the class, into the workforce. I never really thought of myself as the only woman, but I also hung out with the guys. So one of the things that I learned was my emotions are my emotions. Now, if you know me in general, I'm a very jokey person, a laughy person, et cetera, but I don't cry. I'm not taking it home to cry. I'm not going to work to cry. You're not going to see that aspect of me. And I just realized I gave bad advice to someone because you just said, don't tell them they can't cry, which is, when I think about it, is an excellent point because people get angry and that is an emotion. So long-winded way of asking, even though we tend to be emotional creatures, women are still thought of as emotional creatures. So even though the research says anger is an emotional state, most men, I don't think, will recognize that.
Agreed.
But they will see you if you're crying. How do you handle that as a female, showing your emotions, but still continue to get the respect of your peers?
So maybe I'll start with, I would have described myself exactly the same way up until the day that I found myself hyperventilating and crying in the office, right? Meaning that I would never have thought that I would have shown that side of myself to somebody until it happened.
Yeah.
And it was a surprise. I mean, it was kind of like, oh my God, and set me back, right? So much so that people that had walked by and seen me, they thought that something like completely inappropriate,
oh my God.
Yeah, something really bad had happened, and it just wasn't. And so I don't have an easy answer for you.
Other I know it was
than,
a loaded question.
Well, no, other than totally. To say, though, I think it's okay to bring more than one version of yourself to work, right? It's okay to come in as, you know, today I need to be the really strict
stoic.
Disciplinarian or stoic, or, you know, I need to look pulled together, right? That's the uniform I need to put on today. And I know for myself, you know, I actually do have to put myself in a little bit of a costume. Right, like I couldn't get up here on stage in jeans and a t-shirt and feel like I could speak confidently to you guys. I have to kind of have on the, this is my persona for right now. But I think it's okay to have more than one version of yourself. And I think if you're okay with it, you need to allow yourself to practice those different people and when you want to show up being them.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Okay, we can take Hi. One final question over here.
Thank you. Great panel. One story that resonated with me was, you know, being able to manage up and then having a very strong supporter leave the organization. And you mentioned broadening your stakeholder circle. In a large organization, you know, how do you have any strategies to help maintain that broader network without looking like you're jumping around your manager that you're trying to manage up with?
Yeah, I would say, by the way, your manager needs you to do that for their success as well. And in fact, they're counting on you to build those relationships. In a matrix organization, you're not going beyond the manager, you're building the right relationships. So I would say the simple thing is list down your 5 or 6 stakeholders, why they matter, and how you plan to engage them. And if you're feeling a little nervous that you're going beyond your manager, tell him what you're doing, him or her, what you're doing. So, you know, in fact, they'll appreciate you for it. So I would say be thoughtful on who you want to invest. Have that in your mental map. Share it with your manager and take it from there. But it's an expectation, I would say. It's not even a nice to have.
I would
thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I would also say look for opportunities to volunteer, to be part of maybe the Women's Resource Network and other ways to get visibility in your organization with senior management as well as to build your skills.
Mm-hmm. So. Don't use that other relationship with other managers as an opportunity to complain about your own department or anybody in your department. That's the one thing your manager doesn't want, is to know that, is to think that you're talking to other managers or anybody else in another department as an opportunity to undermine what's happening there. Take your complaints to your manager first.
Thank you.
Probably one more.
Great questions. We can. Do you want to do one
yeah,
more?
One more.
Do I have time? Okay.
I
think people sat down and left.
Oh, okay.
Now, one more
There's
question
one
right in
Sorry.
The middle there.
One last.
Hi, ladies. I want to say thank you for this session. It's been very eye-opening. I'm a little nervous. Bear with me. I just wanted to know, what would you advise if you have a good relationship with your manager in person, then you have a change where you're working remotely and you feel like you're not quite in stride anymore, how would you approach that? Thank you.
Denise, that sounds like it's for you.
So I mean, I think I would start by trying to reflect on what changed. So in other words, if you had a really good relationship when you were working in close proximity, is it because you had more frequent touch points? Is it because you got to, you know, even just wave at them as you walked by the office and say good morning? And if it's something as easy as that, I would use technology to try to recreate that, right? So, you know, get on Instant Messenger and say, good morning. You know, that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to say good morning, you know. Or pick up the phone and call them. If it's something a little bit more serious, like maybe your manager isn't used to managing remote workers, and maybe they're having a hard time understanding your productivity or understanding what you're really working on, I would open that line of dialogue, and I would actually say, because I like kind of straight shooters, I'd say, are you getting what you need from me remote? You know, is my communication with you frequent enough? Is there some different way you would like me to interact with you? And you know, what I've seen over time is everyone has a slightly different style there. But, you know, like when I joined my company, my position that I'm in now, people are like, oh, we'll schedule time with you, we'll schedule time with you. I said, you know, scheduling time with me is great for formal things where you want to sit down and have my undivided attention. But a lot of times I'm sitting in an airport waiting on a flight, or I'm driving, you know, to the grocery store or whatever. So text my cell phone or call my cell phone. And if I've got time, if I'm in that airport, hey, I'd love the company. We can chat for 20 minutes while I board my plane, right? It's a good time to catch up.
She's not going to pick up if she can't pick up.
Because I know how to manage my schedule. Right?
But I would say don't, you know, back to the point you made, Celeste, you can work remotely, but I really believe you have to, if you're working remotely, have regular touch points. It could be once a month, once a quarter. That face-to-face conversation is not replaceable with everything else that you do. So working remotely doesn't mean that you never sit down and have that face-to-face. And I would say I even recently just noticed the difference. On your career development kind of conversation, it's fine on the phone, but the in-person makes a huge difference. So just schedule the regular touch points, whatever your schedule and your manager's schedule allows. But don't replace that in person completely is what I would say.
And try the video. And that was something that was new to me. I'm not comfortable on camera. I'm not comfortable in front of a camera. But I have found that as I've adopted that into my day-to-day, it's a really good substitute if you can't, you know, make a 5,000-mile flight or something like that. It's a really good substitute.
Great. Well, I think that's been a consistent theme through our discussion today, which is to develop that interpersonal relationship as a way to manage your career and manage your boss. So thank you. I think I'm going to ask each of you just to summarize maybe one or two points that you may not have had a chance to share with the audience.
No, I would just reinforce for me there are two things that are critical. First, take ownership of your career. So go ahead and plan that career discussion with your manager, not just an update with your manager, but your career aspiration with your manager. Take input and feedback on that. And two, build your reputation. And what I mean by that is the advocacy piece I was talking about. List, you know, with the question asked, list the people that you really want to engage and have a plan for them and go ahead and address that. There is a point, actually, that I did not get to, if you don't mind, which is we talked about the matrix. I would highly encourage that you're brave and step out of your current functional role and learn how to work in a matrix by doing other roles. The best way to do that, to appreciate somebody else's perspective, is actually to go and do a role that you haven't done before, because you can better appreciate where they're coming from, leverage it better, you have more credibility. So that would be my third one, is be brave and take something that's a bit different from what you do today.
So I'll leave you with two really simple thoughts. One is, let people know what you need, and don't feel like you have to be overly accommodating or overly nice. And I'll give you a specific example. Particularly if I was doing presentations or working with slides or giving a pitch, I'd always be like, oh, it's okay, I can work with this slide, right? Or the order doesn't matter, I'll make it go. And what I learned is, once I got specific in giving feedback about how I wanted it set up, I became a better speaker. Right, because I let the slide do some of the work for me. I let the slide do the heavy lifting. But I had to communicate that to people and say, I know that you think you've just created this brilliant slide kind of a thing, right? But I really need it to look like this. And that resonates with people, and they'll help you. And then they'll learn your style, and it gets easier. The second thing is, and I tell my two girls this all the time, is everyone gets to have a bad day. Right? You all get to have a bad phone call. You get to send a bad email. You know, everyone gets a once in a while, I was not at my best during this time. What matters is how you recover from it and making sure that you don't then beat yourself up about that for the rest of your career. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You might remember it forever. Chances are nobody else is going to remember it 2 hours later. It's fine.
I would just leave you with one tip, which is listen more. A lot of times when we think about managing up, we're thinking about how to talk to our manager. But I would say we don't often listen in an engaged way to our managers. And that's one of the biggest frustrations, is when a manager feels like they've told their employees something and they haven't been heard. So put as much energy into listening as you are into planning what you're going to say.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
This has been a wonderful session. Thank you.